Ladies and gentlemen, I should like to express my personal pride and gratitude for the fact that the University of Bergen has decided to confer on me a doctor's degree honoris causa in connection with its celebration of the half centenary of the death of Ludwig Wittgenstein, the great thinker whose two main revolutionizing contributions to philosophy, the Tractatus Logico-Philosophicus and the Philosophische Untersuchungen, were originally conceived during his two longish stays in Norway. Second, I should like, on behalf of the body known as the Wittgenstein Trustees, and of which I happen to be a member, to express the gratitude of the learned world, and chiefly the community of philosophers, for what the University of Bergen has done to rescue to posterity the complete body of Wittgenstein's philosophical writings. Thanks to the use of modern information technologies, Wittgenstein's life work is now accessible to students and general readers the world over. With this, the University of Bergen has created for itself a monumentum aere perennius which no other learned institution can equal. I have called my talk Remarks on Wittgenstein's use of the terms Sinn, Sinnlos, Unsinnig, Wahr and Gedanke in Tractatus. In Tractatus 5.525, Wittgenstein makes a tripartite distinction. Certainty, possibility and impossibility of a state of affairs, he says, are not expressed by a proposition, but by the fact that an expression is a tautology, a significant proposition, or a contradiction. And in 4.461, he says, Die Wahrheit der Tautologie ist gewiss, des Satzes möglich, der Kontradiktion unmöglich. Of tautologies, Wittgenstein says, moreover, that they are senseless, sinnlos, but not nonsensical, unsinnig. They are a sort of extreme case in the operation with otherwise meaningful sentences. Wittgenstein does not make a corresponding statement about contradictions, but I think we have the right to infer that they too are senseless, though not nonsensical. Since a meaningful sentence is neither necessary nor contradictory, it is contingent. This means that it and its negation are both possible. It is important to note that on the Tractatus view, meaningful sentences are contingent. I am afraid that this is something which commentators have not always clearly and duly observed. A meaningful, sinful sentence has what may be called a bipolar relation to truth value. It can be true and it can be false. Tautologies and contradictions have what I shall call a unipolar relation to truth. The tautology is true, Wittgenstein says, bedingungslos wahr, unconditionally true, and cannot be not true. The contradiction, again, is false and cannot be true. There are also sentences which have what I shall call a unipolar relation to truth. These are sentences which are neither true nor false. For example, moral, aesthetic, religious and other valuations, and also norm givings, so-called deontic sentences like commands, permissions and prohibitions. If a sentence has a unipolar relation to truth, it is senseless, meaningless, but also true if it is a tautology, and false if it is a contradiction. To admit that a sentence can be both true and void of sense may seem awkward, but it is fully consistent with Wittgenstein's position in the Tractatus. In order to remove the impression of awkwardness here, one might take the view that tautologies and contradictions are not real propositions, so sentences. This possibility too Wittgenstein seems to have considered. In the remarks on the foundations of mathematics, he says of the tautology P implies P, that he sees in it a degenerate proposition which is on the side of truth. Ich sehe in ihm einen degenerierten Satz, der auf der Seite der Wahrheit ist. Similarly, one can then call a contradiction a degenerate sentence on the side of falsehood. One can defend these locutions, moreover, by reference to the way the tautologous and contradictory nature of a sentence in propositional logic emerges from a truth table. This fits Wittgenstein's idea that tautologies and contradictions, although they are senseless, are not nonsensical, unsinnig. In 3.4, Wittgenstein says, der Gedanke ist der sinnvolle Satz. In 3.3 again, nur der Satz hat Sinn. And in 3.12, das Zeichen, durch welches wir den Gedanken ausdrücken, nenne ich das Satzzeichen. Und der Satz ist das Satzzeichen in seiner projektiven Beziehung zur Welt. 3.5 says, das angewandte gedachte Satzzeichen ist der Gedanke. Wittgenstein's distinction between Satzzeichen and Satz recalls the distinction between sentence and proposition, which, for example, Moore was keen to observe. The Satzzeichen is a physical phenomenon which is given a Sinn by being applied or thought in a projective relation to the world. If thoughts are meaningful sentences and meaningful sentences are contingently true or false, then thoughts are contingent. In the last paragraph of the preface of the book, Wittgenstein says that the thoughts which his book communicates seems to him unassailable and definitive, unantastbar und definitiv. The question arises, which thoughts? This is not clear to me. Is Tractatus a collection of contingent sentences then? Certainly not. Is it even true that Tractatus communicates thoughts, Gedanken? I am not clear in which sense the book can claim to communicate unassailable and definitive truths or thoughts. Here seems to be some kind of muddle, or perhaps even inconsistency in the text. And the question is how we shall deal with it. It has struck me that Wittgenstein could have left out simply the troublesome sentence in the preface without loss of meaning of the message of his book. The rest of the paragraph where it occurs can stand by itself. In 5.4733, Wittgenstein, with a reference to Frege, uses the term legitimately constructed proposition, in German, rechtmäßig gebildeter Satz. Every such sentence, he says, must have a sense, and if it has no sense, this can only be, kann nur daran liegen, because we have given no meaning, Bedeutung, to some of its constituent parts. Here, several critical questions arise. In which sense of must every legitimately constructed proposition have a sense? Must it have a bipolar relation to truth, in which case it is contingent? Maybe a unipolar relation will suffice, in which case it is either necessarily true or necessarily false, that is, contradictory. Or Can it even have a zero polar relation to truth, that is, be neither true nor false? If the relation to truth is unipolar, the sentence is senseless, sinless, but at the same time true or false and not nonsensical. How shall we understand Wittgenstein's words that if a sentence has no sense, then this can only be because we have given no meaning to one of its constituent parts? As an example, he mentions, Socrates is identical. It has no sense, is nonsensical, because we have given no meaning to the word identical as an adjective. This is easy to understand. But does the same hold for all nonsensical sentences, namely that they have a constituent part without Bedeutung? Socrates is identical is a clear example of a sentence which has no sense, is sinnlos, because of the fact that it has a part, namely the word identical, which in the context of the sentence has or has been given no meaning. The sentence, Socrates is identical, moreover, is not only senseless, sinnlos, but also nonsensical, unsinnig. The question may be raised, why is this sentence monster not only senseless, but is this in the stronger sense of being nonsensical? An answer, not given by Wittgenstein, however, is that the sentence is ungrammatical, not a correctly formed sentence of the English language. In this it differs from other types of sentence with what I called a zero-polar relation to truth, for example, value judgments and norm formulations. I like this picture is an expression of evaluation, neither true nor false, and so is smoking prohibited as norm formulation. But the two last mentioned sentences are grammatically well formed. We understand them, they have a use in our language. Socrates is identical, is unintelligible and useless. Sentences which are neither true nor false, but are well formed and have an established use in language, are, although senseless according to the Tractatus, not nonsensical according to the view I am taking here. In the famous penultimate sentence, 6.54 of the book, Wittgenstein tells us that one who understands him will recognize his sentences as nonsensical, unsinnig. The sentences are like a ladder which he has to climb. Er muss diese Sätze überwinden, dann sieht die Welt richtig. One is struck by the word world, die Welt, here. The opening sentence of the Tractatus is the familiar, the world is everything that is the case, that is, all contingent truths. Is the world which we are supposed to see clearly, the world of contingent facts, the So-Sein, of which Wittgenstein says in 6.41, alles geschehen und so sein ist zufällig. Is not what we see when we have surmounted the sentences rather their nonsensicality? But one could also say that having thrown away the ladder, we see the world of contingent truths, that is, the world of sense, so to say, undiluted by the philosopher's nonsense. That would agree with 4.114, sie, namely the philosophie, soll das Denkbare abgrenzen und damit das Undenkbare. Sie soll das Undenkbare von innen durch das Denkbare begrenzen. And 4.115, sie wird das Unsagbare bedeuten, indem sie das Sagbare klar darstellt. This does not mean that philosophy or the Tractatus will make us see which sentences are true and which ones are false. To determine this is the task of what Wittgenstein calls not quite adequately, I think, die Naturwissenschaften, because what it really means are the empirical sciences in our sense of the word. The task of philosophy is to elucidate the sentences and separate what belongs to the world of sense or to das bestreitbare Gebiet der Naturwissenschaft, as he calls it, from what makes no sense is nonsensical. I think this is how we have to understand the idea that surmounting the sentences of the Tractatus, we come to see the world, that is, that which is the case, clearly. But the question remains how we shall understand the nonsensicality of the Tractarian sentences. Are the sentences then not legitimately constructed? And if they are not, is this because they contain constituent parts without meaning, Bedeutung? It's hard to see that this were the case. The sentences of the Tractatus, unlike Wittgenstein's sample sentence, Socrates is identical, are grammatically well formed, and in that sense legitimately constructed, rechtmäßig gebildet. The reason why they are nonsensical must lie elsewhere. I think we should look for it in the context of what Wittgenstein says about the pictorial nature of language and correspondence between the picture and the pictured. The sentences of the Tractatus are obviously not pictures of a language-independent reality, nor are their ultimate constituent parts einfache Gegenstände, simple objects, which, as he says in one place, hang on one another like members of a chain. The sentences of Tractatus do not describe states of affairs, therefore they do not say anything. It would make good sense to say that norm formulations and value judgments have no factual meaning, but surely they say something in an ordinary and familiar sense of saying. If this were not so, we could not understand them and use them the way we actually do. It would be natural to say that such sentences have a normative and an evaluative meaning, and that therefore, although senseless, they are not nonsensical. Sentences with factual meaning say that something or other is the case. They invite us to compare what they say with the way things are with reality. The situation is different with the sentences of the Tractatus. They have no place in this realm of sentence meaning, factual, evaluative, normative, what you like. They are senseless in the stronger sense of nonsensical. This is so because they are not sentences in the Tractatus meaning of the term. They are attempts to say something which cannot be said, attempts to transgress the limits of language as marked by the picture theory. Although grammatically well formed and in some sense intelligible, they have no established use in ordinary discourse, unlike, for example, evaluations and normative sentences. They are just plain nonsense, but fighting one's way through them will show us something by taking us to a platform from where we see the world of Zosein, of contingent fact, rightly. This, I would say, is the sense morale of Wittgenstein's book. But is this not a very meagre result? So it seems. But Wittgenstein says himself that a merit of his work is that it makes us see how little has been achieved when all the problems of philosophy have been solved. This is not an expression of modesty, but of a deep and consequential insight. Wittgenstein of the Tractatus thought that he had solved, or rather done away with, all problems of philosophy once and for all. He says in the preface, Ich bin also der Meinung, die Probleme im Wesentlichen endgültig gelöst zu haben. The problems have their origin in attempts to transcend the boundaries of the sayable, that is, the contingently true or false. Their solution is to see the futility of the attempt. Wittgenstein of the Untersuchungen took a somewhat different view of philosophy. Its problems are linguistic confusions which cannot once and for all be put right, but will again and again puzzle the reflective mind. Their solution is to free us temporarily from the mental discomfort they cause. Perhaps one can say that Wittgenstein of the Tractatus took an absolutist, Wittgenstein of the Untersuchungen again a relativistic view of the philosophical enterprise. But the difference is hardly fundamental. Another difference between the two Wittgensteins has to do with the philosopher's own language. In Untersuchungen 120, Wittgenstein writes, "Wenn ich über Sprache, Wort, Satz etc. rede, muss ich die Sprache des Alltags reden." But the language of Tractatus is anything but the language of every day. In the Untersuchungen 108 he says, "Die Philosophie der Logik redet in keinem anderen Sinne von Sätzen und Wörtern, als wir es in der Sprache des Alltags tun, nicht von einem unräumlichen und unzeitlichen Unding." I think we must understand this also as a statement of self-criticism. Finally, some remarks about my own inclinations when thinking about these matters. I would agree to the idea that meaningful sentences, sinful Sätze, are contingent, and that necessary and impossible sentences are senseless, void of sense, but not nonsensical, unsinnig. I would avoid the locutions necessarily true and necessarily false, and consistently say necessary and impossible, respectively, or contradictory. My reason for doing so is that, in my opinion, the sense in which necessary sentences are true and contradictory sentences false is very different from the sense in which contingent sentences are true or false. We attribute truth value to the latter, to contingent sentences, that is, on the basis of a comparison between a linguistic picture and reality. Contingent truth is agreement, contingent falsehood, disagreement between what is said. But necessary sentences are not true because they agreed with something outside language, nor are contradictory sentences false because of their disagreement with facts. So it is therefore that I would avoid the locutions necessarily true and necessarily false, and consistently say simply necessary and impossible. The last two terms cover, I think, a great many different and also distinguishable cases. By a thought, Gedanke, I would understand, with Wittgenstein, the sense of a contingently true or false sentence. Non-contingent sentences, which are void of truth value, are neither true nor false, do not say anything factual. But if they are grammatically well formed and have a settled use in ordinary language, they may show something of interest to the philosopher. However, I shall not here penetrate the problem of saying and showing. Thank you.